This is Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on 760 WJR. Your bird's eye view on Michigan's business and entertainment scene. Here's Jeff.
All right, welcome to Let's Go Michigan on this beautiful summer Saturday afternoon. Glad you're with us. Kristen Kajawa, Mark Pastoria here with me, co-hosting the show as always. Good to be with you guys on this great Michigan weekend.
Yeah, Jeff, it's great to be here, especially inside today on another 90-degree scorcher.
Yeah, I know we've talked about this a lot. We've talked about, you know, do we prefer winters in Michigan or summer in Michigan? I think all of us kind of went with, you know, we gave a good nod to winter. We love winter Michigan.
We do?
Well, except for Mark.
Actually,
that's true.
That's right.
Kristen, you and I love winter sports and everything. Mark, he's a warm weather kind of guy all through and through. You got it. You asked for it. What do you think about these steamy days, hot and steamy days? These okay in your book? Or
I love it.
Right? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Would you like it just as much if you didn't have a pool?
Yeah, I go on a friend's boat.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Like I did last night.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's great. Frankly, for me too, I don't mind it that much either. I like the heat. I really do. So I'm good. But we wanted to make sure we do a call out. You know, this week is Animal Rights Awareness Week, and it's a good opportunity for us. We're going to tell you about that in a second. But before we jump into the detail on Animal Rights Awareness Week, using it as an opportunity to just call out in this heat, you know, certainly we're looking out for ourselves, we're looking out for our families, our kids, and so on, but pets too. We need to take extra precaution, just reminding everyone, make sure your pets have access to cool, fresh water, bring them inside if you can, in the air conditioning if you can, put a fan on them.
Don't take them in the car. Oh. And the other one that I think people forget, because I'm constantly watching them in our neighborhood, they don't need to go for a walk. The cement is so
scorching.
Hot on their little paws that you need to be really aware of where you're taking your pets for walks. I mean, just pick a different path. Go for a walk on the grass or something else.
We love our pets.
Yeah.
We owe it to them. Listen, it's Animal Rights Awareness Week, and this is just, again, good opportunity to remind us about taking care of our pets in this heat. But also, beyond that, just mentioning the significance of here in this country, and certainly beyond, but here in this country, 66% of Americans have household pets. Pets are part of our lives. When I say we take care of our families, we take care of our kids, some people will even say, you don't need to go beyond that because our pets fall in the category of our family or our kids.
Right.
Right. Exactly. We think of them that way. I certainly do. Mm-hmm. Love my doggies. I'm a dog guy. And I do feel like my dogs are part of the family, no doubt about it. So this takes place the third week of every June. The focus is on pets, farm animals, wildlife. It's just a good reminder a week like this to just, you know, go the extra mile, do the extra thing, be good to an animal somehow, somewhere, whether it's your pet or beyond that. Maybe go for the garden burger for lunch. The plant-based alternative this week is a good way to honor Animal Rights Week. That's for sure. Okay, moving on. Look, Mark, I got to call you out on this one. It seems we do every year for a couple of two, 3 years running now. We've asked you what happens this time of year with the official marking of the start of summer. Mark, do you remember what that's called?
Summer solstice.
Oh, he got it.
Yay.
But on his third or fourth year, he's got it.
And summer. It starts with a strawberry moon, which it did.
Oh, listen to. Now, I did not know that.
And it's the earliest in two centuries due to the quirk in the calendar.
He came prepared. He
Whoa.
Did his homework.
How
he knew
that?
He knew we were going to ask the question.
He knew.
He knew indeed. Well, of course, June 20th this year marks the start of the summer solstice, the first official day of summer. That means, of course, that we get more sunlight in that given day than any other. Interestingly, by the way, that's due to the tilt of the earth toward the sun. But as you start to go now, as we move toward the winter solstice, we'll be tilted furthest away. Days get shorter. You can kind of picture that. So guys, while it's fun news, we love the longer days, love the ability to be out longer instead of stuck in our homes. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the other thing that happens after you cross the summer solstice, Mark, you're smiling in there. What happens?
It's like when you get old. The days are getting shorter.
Well, you do get older with every passing day. Mark, you're right on both
Well, you
fronts
get shorter.
There. And you do get shorter. But on point, in context here, that's exactly right. All right, so here we are, right at the start, official start of summer, but we're deep in it now. We love it. Listen, coming up on the show, interesting show ahead. Kristen, give us a brief overview of what's ahead.
Take it away, Kristen.
Yep. Later in the, you are full of it today. Holy moly.
He's just feeling good that he finally got the summer solstice
right. Exactly.
He's feeling good about that.
So guys, later in the show, we're speaking with our good friend, Rose White. We're talking about strawberry picking, which is happening right now, the U-Pick season. Also happening this weekend is Blake's Farm has their big strawberry festival. We're going to speak with Mark Dent. Something that's interesting to you, Mark, is the difference between a Sonic logo and a jingle and how that's affecting branding and marketing. Additionally, we're going to talk to Lindsay Moore, also from M Live, about three hidden gems within our great state, places that we should visit this summer.
Love all that. Looking forward to all of that ahead. Hope you are too. Stick with us. We're going to run to a break. Back with more ahead right here on Let's Go Michigan.
Welcome back to Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on WJR. Once again, with a 5,000-foot view of Michigan business and events, here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, welcome back to Let's Go Michigan. Kristen, Mark here with me. Guys, we know the state of Michigan is big in apples and in blueberries when it comes to fruits grown and sold here in the state of Michigan. But the strawberry business also very important, and what a privilege and a treat for us to be able to go out and pick our own right from the field. But if you want to do it, you got to get moving because the season is short. It's about a 2-week window, roughly. We're in the heart of it right now. Various U-Pick opportunities throughout the state. I believe there's a strawberry, at least one strawberry farm where you can go pick in most every county, if not every county here in the state of Michigan. Guys, have you done that?
I have. It's so much fun.
It is.
It's a great family activity. Well, what am I saying? It's a great family activity. It's fun to just do it on your own, but it's more fun to go with the kids.
Right.
And I, honestly, I think we probably eat as many as we put in our little bucket along the way, but man, it's fun.
Right. It is a proverbial treat for us to be able to do it. Mark, have you done it?
I haven't tried it yet. I may do that this weekend.
Yeah.
You got to do it. You got to get close to the earth, close to the where the source, I guess, is the way to say it.
Get down on your hands and knees.
Right.
Get down on your hands and knees. Pick some good ones. Eat some good ones. Enjoy. Be out in great nature in the sun and enjoy both the experience and the joy that comes with having some fresh Michigan strawberries on hand as well, at least for a short time anyway. All right, listen, we got a chance to catch up with Rose White. She's a reporter for MLive.com. Rose, tell us about the significance of the strawberry, and in particular, the U-Pick strawberry industry right here in the state of Michigan.
You know, I think Michigan, we're known for our apples and our cherries and our blueberries, and those are a real kind of behemoths in the industry or in the agricultural field. But there is also strawberry fields in every county in Michigan. So Michigan grows about 43,000 tons of fresh strawberries every year. But the bulk of those are actually picked by U-pickers. So there's not a ton of commercial production, but we do see a lot of people go out and pick their own strawberries every year and contribute to the economy in that way.
Of course, you know, the end game here of all this, when you go out and pick your own strawberries, is to be able to go home and enjoy whether it's fresh strawberries or, you know, cooking with strawberries, whatever it may be. But the experience itself is also one that is kind of magical. You know, it's a little bit of a treasure hunt and you're going out in the field. You're obviously trying to find the prime strawberries and there's some satisfaction associated with picking them yourself. You become part of the, you know, the agricultural broader experience in some way.
Yeah, I think for a lot of families, it becomes a tradition to head out there and pick some strawberries themselves. And I think people do find a lot of joy in being able to find the best strawberries and do it that way. And I also think then you can really stock up on how much you want and people turn them into jams or freeze them. And there's so many options that you can do with Michigan strawberries, which if you've never plucked a Michigan strawberry and popped it in your mouth, they are very sweet and very delicious. And they don't really taste like anything we get in the store around here.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think, too, part of the taste comes from the fact that you had a hand in it. You know, I picked this one and I made it happen. I brought it home. I made whatever it was, the strawberry jam, you know, that I'm eating right now. I think all things taste better, especially for kids. You know, that kind of joy and wonder that's associated with being close to the earth. You know, it makes for that greater sensory experience. And it's a beautiful thing from the ground to your mouth. So let's talk about this year's season. I think, first of all, a lot of the strawberries that we pick, I think the majority of them, is it true to say from the west side of the state?
You know, it kind of depends. Like I mentioned, there are strawberry patches in every county in Michigan. Some might be open to the public, some might not, but they do grow everywhere in Michigan. And I think if you just kind of look around your area, you should probably be able to find some kind of field that is within an hour's distance at least. The key thing about the strawberry you pick season is it's very short. So it's in full swing now. And if you don't have plans to go when you want to, you should probably make them. One strawberry farmer in Monroe County, she said that it's 9 months of work that comes down to a period of 18 to 20 days. So right. It is very short. And if you blink, you might miss it.
That's a good way to put it. It is a lot of work for a very short window. Okay. And then lastly, what about costs? So let's say, you know, a family wants to go out and pick strawberries. What are they looking at in terms of cost? How are these things priced?
You know, it really depends on the farm that you're going to. And the biggest piece of advice that I got from every farmer I spoke to was just call before you go to A, make sure the farm is open because they might be closing for a day to allow the berries to ripen. And then also to just find out what the cost is per pound.
Okay. And then in terms of just finding information, like, is there a central repository somewhere online of information relating to where Michigan strawberries you pick type farms are located? Is there a resource available?
You know, there's not really one website in particular, but there are sort of a lot of Michigan travel blogs and Michigan websites that have lists of a bunch of farms. I'm sure you can also just kind of Google in your area where the nearest you pick farm is, and you'd be able to find something. A lot of these farms use Facebook to communicate with people as well, which is also helpful in finding out when the farm is open.
All right, great. Rose White, reporter for MLive.com. Get out there and pick the best ones. The time is now. What a cool thing to have right here in the state of Michigan.
So Jeff, how exciting is this? We have Stephanie Ginsburg from Ed Dunaback and Girls Farm. She's going to tell us exactly what's happening with the strawberry you pick season.
Down on the farm, Stephanie, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Really good to have you and really happy that it's finally strawberry season here in the state of Michigan. How are things shaping up for you guys?
Well, we're good. They turned up the heat, so yeah. We're good with that.
Well, that's good. So tell us about your farm and your operation and what it's like to be a strawberry farmer.
Yeah, so I am part of the fourth generation here on the farm. It's my mom, my sister, and I run it. We operate 170 acres between strawberries, row crops, apples, cherries, asparagus, all kinds of stuff we've got going on here. So, but strawberry season is always one that is fast and furious, and we've been doing it since before I was born. My great grandpa and my grandpa always grew strawberries. So multi-generational on that, and there's nothing better than a Michigan strawberry.
That is absolutely true. Are you guys all you pick, or do you also harvest the strawberries yourselves and sell commercially?
So we don't sell commercially. We sell everything right out of the barn. So Michigan strawberries are not shippers. I don't know if you ever tell the difference between a Michigan berry and the berries you buy in the store, but the berries you buy in the store are considered an everberry. So they kind of grow different. They're harder in form. They're white in the center. Those are called everberry. We grow a Michigan berry, which is a June berry, which is why they're only 2 to 3 weeks out of the year. And you pick them and you eat them. That's just how it works. You got to do something with them within 24 hours or they'll spoil. So really, they're not able to be shipped out anywhere. So we pick in the morning and we try to sell out by the end of the day.
And you guys have like a little market right there where people can stop and buy. You can do you pick or buy through your market, right?
Yep. So we are a full farm market with a restaurant. We have a brewery, winery, cidery, a gift shop. I got farm animals, playground, so on and so forth. So we have more of the agritainment side as well. So we try to get folks to come out, pick some strawberries, and then go in the barn and get a strawberry slushy or a strawberry donut or maybe some lunch because it's hard work out there in the field.
And I bet that the strawberry slushy is not made with that bottled strawberry syrup, right, Stephanie?
Oh, no. We teach our 14-year-old workers how to haul strawberries on day one. So,
yeah, it's all fresh strawberries right from the field. Fresh as can be. Those June-bearing Michigan strawberries, nothing like it.
I'm dying. My mouth is salivating. I'm ready to go. Let's end the show early, Jeff, and let's head over there. Honestly.
Well, I thought it was kind of funny when Stephanie said, you've got to do something with them right away. That's the easy part.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. All right. Well, everybody needs to make a point of getting out to your place ASAP. How do we do that? Tell us again where you're located and give us the website address as well.
Yeah. So we're on the northwest side of Grand Rapids, just 10 minutes from downtown, 3025 Six Mile Road. There's a big white barn. We've got a pink truck out front, so you can't really miss it. We're known for our pink truck and our pink tractor.
All right, Stephanie Ginsburg from Ed Dunaback and Girls Farm. Appreciate you being on with us.
Look forward to visiting, by the way. And next, after the break, we have our friend Mark Dent from The Hustle speaking with Kristen about the power of using sound in branding. Stick with us. Back with more in a minute right here on Let's Go Michigan.
Welcome back to Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on WJR. Once again, with a 5,000-foot view of Michigan business and events, here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, welcome back to Let's Go Michigan. Now turning to an interview, Kristen, you did with Mark Dent from The Hustle. This is a really interesting story, the power of sound to help drive a sale in the equation between a retailer and a consumer or a brand and a consumer, whatever it may be, the power of sound to help drive a purchase.
Mark Dent, welcome to the show. This must have been fun for you to research because we all know what a jingle is, but tell us, what is a sonic logo? Is this a new way to describe a jingle?
It basically is. Some people might quibble and say that, well, a sonic logo is actually just like a sort of modern evolved version of a jingle. Most people, I mean, they'd maybe say that a sonic logo only lasts for like a few seconds and maybe doesn't have words, whereas a traditional jingle could last anywhere from a few seconds to, you know, maybe 20 or 30 seconds and usually does have words. But they're all kind of lumped together. And so if you're really deep in the industry, you may segment them. But basically, sonic logos are just their new jingles that have kind of made a return.
And when we talk about a jingle, we talk about a sonic logo, we're really talking about a mnemonic device.
Yeah.
A way to remember something, you know, a way to cement it in our brain.
Yeah, exactly. Because brands, they want to, I mean, their goal is that whenever you're in the store or wherever they are and you're faced with choice, something about their brand is going to stick out to you and it's going to be in your head somewhere. And one way to do that is through a jingle or a sonic logo. And potentially, maybe it doesn't always work, but it can be very effective.
Right. I mean, I think we can all come up with a few companies that their jingle or their sonic logo comes to mind instantly. I mean, the very first one in your article was Ricola, and that's exactly who I thought of very first thing because it's so unique. But there's many companies that have done very well, Microsoft being another one.
Right. O'Reilly Auto Parts is one that's one of the most recognized. And like, as soon as you say O'Reilly, I can imagine that one.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Klondike Bar, that's up there. Some of the newer ones that have started to become really recognized, and I think maybe surprisingly so, would be like Netflix, because they just have like that ta-dum when you kind of log in. And unlike, you know, O'Reilly Auto Parts or Ricola, it's just like these really two sharp notes that last for maybe 1 second. But it's just Netflix has that every time you log on. And so many people, of course, log on to Netflix. And so it's really worked well for them. Another one that people think of a lot is McDonald's. They have like that ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. And, you know, that's been around for 20 years or so now. And that's really, that one, you know, when I was talking earlier about how some people say there's a difference between sonic logos and jingles, that one kind of like is the bridge sort of between them of these like modern Netflix things and traditional barbershop quartet jingles. McDonald's kind of is the bridge, I think. The interesting thing that while I was researching this article is, you know, I found this company called SoundOut, and they're kind of like a consulting company for brands who are trying to get more involved with audio. And they've done some pretty substantial studies on which sonic logos are doing well, which are not, what are the kind of characteristics that work best for sonic logos. Like all of these things they've really not been studied, like hardly at all, which is kind of hilarious because jingles and sonic logos have been, you know, they've been used for nearly 100 years now. But they've done a couple of these studies over the last few years, and they found that, like, all things considered, that most brands aren't doing well with their sonic logos, though.
They aren't doing well. That surprises me. Tell me why.
Right. So, like, the goal, I mean, the absolute goal, I mean, you could argue that one goal for a sonic logo is just to, you know, create this nice little sound so that when someone hears it, it just sounds good to them, right? But truly the goal that you'd want is for it to be recognized so that when somebody plays that sound, then you can be like, oh, well, yeah, O'Reilly Auto Parts or whatever your company is. That doesn't happen often. the recognition rate for like the average Sonic logo, and they looked at like 135 brands, I believe, you know, the average recognition rate was about 33%. And the reason for that is because most companies are choosing these more kind of modern Sonic logos where they don't say the company's name. So it's not like O'Reilly Auto Parts or Ricola. They're going for more of the Netflix route of just kind of these quick notes. Yeah, yeah. A tone. Uh-huh. And it has worked for Netflix. Let's be clear. I think it's somewhere around 80% of people recognize that, 75%. So it's worked very well for Netflix, but it's hard. But that said, that's what companies are doing. They're just going for like these tones. MasterCard was an example. The CEO of SoundOut was telling me about, you know, MasterCard has invested a lot of money and a lot of sort of time into crafting this Sonic logo, and it's not very recognizable. I have no clue what MasterCard sounds like. Like I listened to their Sonic logo and I was like, yeah, it's just a bunch of notes.
Yeah, I was actually, as you were talking, I was trying to think, gosh, do I know what it sounds like? I don't. You're right. You would say that's a bust. I mean, they failed on that.
Thus far, certainly. Yeah.
Now, has there been any research that has showed the amount of times the sound or the tone or the jingle is used and the placement of it? Because Netflix uses it every time you turn on the app, and it's just that repetition. You know, if you're not an app, for example, and you don't hear it all the time, now you're relying only on either radio, television, something else where you would hear that sound. So I would imagine the rate that that sound is being played is just as important as the sound itself.
Absolutely. And so according to this kind of same study by this, or at least by the same company, their CEO kind of suggested to me that maybe 10% of brands, of big brands, use Sonic logos, which is not a high number, but it's gone up substantially in the last decade. And he suggested that of all the brands that are out there, 3% use Sonic logos consistently and well. So that means, like you were saying, that for people to recognize it, it needs to be everywhere. And most companies just, they are not doing a good job of putting it everywhere or putting it in the right places. Here's one interesting statistic. Like, so during the last Super Bowl, this is according to another kind of consulting firm called AMP, there were 16 companies that had Sonic logos that paid for commercials. And only 11 of those companies actually used their Sonic logo in their ad, which is, you know, the most expensive ad you can basically buy.
Right. That seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah. And so Ricola, which I kind of highlighted in my story, they have not missed an opportunity. Like they have used that,
Ricola.
The yodeler. Yes. Thank you. They've used that yodeler and, or some variation of that yodeler and uh-huh. the Alphorn, in the company claims in every ad, since I think 1994.
Yeah. I was going to say for decades.
When it debuted. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy that the jingles are not going away because I think there's a balance between both, right? I mean, I think mm-hmm. that some companies are going to do very well by selecting a Sonic logo. I think some companies, though, lend themselves better to a jingle. MasterCard is a really good example of that. As you said, you and I both couldn't think of even what the Sonic logo sound was for MasterCard.
No.
But, you know, maybe if they went to a jingle, there's something to be said for that. I mean, that skill of creating the melody and the words, that's a special talent to be able to piece that together.
Right. And I think with radio is particularly interesting when you think about jingles. I listen to a lot of, I'm originally from the Kansas City area and I listen to a lot of sports talk radio there still. I mean, there are companies that have just like the most generic kind of elementary jingles that I cannot get out of my head. Mm-hmm. Like I'll hear them and then it'll be in my head like when I'm, right. you know, working or taking a shower or something. And then similarly, there are companies, just these local type of Kansas City companies that their jingle that I heard when I was like, you know, 14 years old, like I can still recall it to this day if you tell me the name of that company because they are just pretty simple.
I think this is very cool. One, because our engineer, Mark, writes jingles, so this is very fascinating to me.
We were just working on that. I was just, as you called, I was working on the Sonic logo at the end of a song. So you know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to erase it and just sing their name of their company.
We're going back to the jingle.
That's what, you know, what a couple of experts told me is like, you know, they said, if you're trying out this new Sonic logo and you want it to have more of a high-tech kind of sound, go for it, but include the name too. And then maybe after you've had it go around for a while, people will just know the sound enough and you can take the name out if you'd like. But yeah, just having that name in there makes a huge difference, which makes sense.
Right. Yeah. We did that with a phone number a while back. The guy says, you know, I want these guys to remember my phone number. And there's only so many ways you can sing something. I said, well, if you run it enough on TV, they will remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually a window company here in Michigan. And the phone number is part of the song. And it's like one of those earworms. If you hear it once, it's stuck in your brain for literally the rest of the week. You cannot get it out of your head.
I totally know exactly what you're talking
about. And that's my fault.
Yeah, we can thank Mark for that, actually.
I know many of commercials like that that I'm thinking of right now.
Yeah, so. That will come back. Yeah. Well, no, this is great. Thank you for doing the research on this. This is such a good story. As always, you always bring such good stuff to us, and we're happy to share it with our listeners here in Detroit. So thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, coming up next after the break, we have three travel destinations that are must-sees here in the state of Michigan this summer.
All right, Kristen, interesting. Headed to a break. We'll be back right here on Let's Go Michigan.
Welcome back to Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on WJR. Once again, with a 5,000-foot view of Michigan business and events, here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, welcome back to Let's Go Michigan. Well, those of us who live here know how great the state of Michigan is, how many great places to visit. And by the way, it's four seasons. You know, beautiful in the fall, beautiful in the summer, beautiful in the winter. Those of us, again, who live here know that. Many people now beyond the state's borders discovering that and coming and visiting our great state. We're happy about that. Well, there's some obvious places to visit, that's for sure. Places like Mackinac Island getting recognition, other great tourist spots, many others around the state. But then there's the hidden gems that may be off the beaten path, places we don't know about. Maybe they don't jump to mind. Maybe you don't even know about them at all. We're going to do a little travel guide here in this segment of the show and feature some of those off the beaten path, hidden places, hidden gems that people need to be aware of and possibly consider as they make their plans, either as part of a travel journey that they may make. And that could be either as a destination or even if you're just passing through. These are good to have on your list, helping us get it all figured out and helping us make our plans. Lindsay Moore published an article in MLive.com, three Michigan cities to visit, some of which we're going to find out, Kristen, maybe we've visited, maybe you visited, maybe I have, but I'm excited to hear from Lindsay.
Absolutely.
All right, Lindsay Moore, you've got the list, we've got the interest, let's do it.
Yeah, for sure. So honestly, it came out of a great conversation with Dave Lorenz, who headed up the Pure Michigan campaign for the last two decades. And so I felt like, okay, I've got, you know, kind of this huge icon of Michigan right now.
Right, all the travel. He's done an amazing job. Wow, what an ambassador.
Truly, right? And WJR listeners are so lucky that they get to tune into his Travel Michigan show too and get some of these tidbits. But I figured, you know, both selfishly and for the readers, I was like, okay, Dave, tell me like your three underrated spots, right? Cool. Like, where have I not been?
Yeah.
And, you know, he delivered immediately. And these were just, even in doing some research, there are spots with great history, with, you know, little quaint towns, and also just places that, again, have a scenic drive or something you would maybe see in a Pure Michigan ad, but because it's not Detroit or Traverse City or Marquette, you haven't seen it in a Pure Michigan ad. And so our readers loved this, and I added them to my list right away.
Cool. Well, Kristen, are you ready to jump in and get exposed to these three hidden gems?
I'm ready to go.
All right, let's run down this list of three. Lindsay, why don't you kick off your first highlighted city as three places to travel to in 2024 in the state of Michigan?
So the first one that, you know, top of mind for Dave, and I can see why, is Clare, Michigan, which I'm going to be very Michigan, and bear with me, radio listeners, look at your hand, and we're going to go right under like your middle finger knuckle. You know, it's about an hour north of Lansing. And it's this town that really has a lot of quaint history. It's a town of very few people. It's, again, not your big Grand Rapids or Detroit, but they really pride themselves on being a city of local businesses to go in, of antique shopping. And they dub themselves the City of Festivals. And so you could pretty much catch something in all four seasons, again, in a true Michigan spirit, right?
Kristen, I have to ask, have you been to Clare?
You know what? I've probably been through it and I didn't even know. Have you been to Clare?
Well, I think I have. And I actually see that there's a town neighboring it called Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been, when I was younger, one of my big passions was horse shows and horse showing and so on. I think there was a horse show in Harrison. I think I've been there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there you go. You know, I want to comment on something. As you think about these towns,
If I said to you, there's a great small town in the state of Michigan, you got to go check it out. There's a Walmart there. There's a Target there. There's a great Applebee's there. And of course, there's McDonald's and Burger King. You know, I see in your article that you mentioned that Clare really prides itself on its small businesses, its unique, locally owned small businesses, merchants, dining establishments, and even flea markets and so on. You know, it just underscores more and more. We know this. We always advocate for shopping small, shopping locally. You can't have a great town if what you can say about the town is go to the Walmart there,
right?
Really check it out. Or, you know, and then Target's right down the street and dine at Applebee's. I mean, no, there's nothing wrong with any of those three establishments, right? But the uniqueness comes from the locally owned small businesses, mm-hmm, right in the town. And this really underscores that. And you highlight that.
Yeah, it's right on their county website, right? It says there are no busy malls or cold department stores here. Ah, like, instead, you know, check out the specialties.
I mean, that's perfect marketing on their end to promote and support their small businesses, which that's not easy to do.
That's not easy to do, but important to do. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you don't make Lindsay's list.
That's right.
No, I'm good, or Dave Lorenz, even more to the point. But here's the thing. They also indicate they've got this Clare Antique Mall there, 35 vendors year-round. You can go to these flea markets, craft shows, quilt auctions, and so on. I mean, this is the fabric and the texture that really makes us, no pun intended.
Yeah.
It's what makes a small town so unique. I have to tell you, do you guys dig like the idea of maybe going to lunch at a locally owned dining establishment and then going to a flea market afterward and seeing what little treasures you could find?
Sure.
That's fun.
Oh, for sure. It's quintessential Americana.
Well said. So Clare, Michigan, it's on the list.
Okay.
And it's not far, relatively speaking. So it's an easy drive. All right. And next, Lindsay.
Yes. So next was one that I really had to dig into history, which was fun homework for me. This is the Sauk Trail. And so more recent history would call it old US 12. It's really kind of that stretch from Detroit to Chicago. But historically, it's an indigenous trail. And so it has all this rich history about different tribes using it. And then on the, I believe, the Pony Express, we have all these major touch points along the way. And it touches on Detroit's River Rogue as well, and some of the indigenous history there. And then right in kind of the middle of this stretch from Detroit to Chicago, around Brooklyn, Michigan, is where the Michigan Historical Society has actually like deemed a marker at the Cambridge Junction. And I really went down a rabbit hole on the Cambridge Junction of just how many, just not only travelers throughout the years, farmers looking for land, but then also well-known names, names you'd see in history books like Henry and Clara Ford and Michigan's Governor Woodbridge and Woodbridge Ferris. And so that type of stuff, I think if you're a history buff and you want to really dig into your own state's history, this is kind of the stop to put on your list in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, now we spoke about Clare and the power of highlighting your locally owned small businesses and all the rest. Here in this case, another thing that makes a small town so interesting is the history, the historical character and background of a given small town, say, for example. And this is the case when it comes to you highlighting the Sauk Trail. And by the way, that's S-A-U-K, Sauk Trail. How interesting. I didn't know about this.
I did not know. I have, however, been to Brooklyn, Michigan.
Mm.
I did a muddy race there.
Oh,
one
that's
time.
Cool. I didn't know. Who knew that you did those?
It was called the Muddy Buddy.
Oh.
I did it with my kids.
You took your kids to do a muddy race?
I sure did. Yeah.
I've been
to Brooklyn, Michigan, but I didn't know anything about the Sauk Trail. So.
Wow. Very cool. All right. So that's a second great recommendation. Nice find. Lindsay, yeah. Number three.
So number three, we're going all the way up to the UP, like into, again, we're going to use the hand, like tip of your index finger, UP.
Okay.
So we're up into Paradise, which is along Lake Superior. And so, you know, I started this portion of the article saying, you know, what's in a name? Like, obviously, somebody had the foresight to say,
to call it Paradise.
Right? I mean, to be surrounded by the Great Lakes. And again, some really interesting history. Part of what really developed this area after it had a huge forest fire totally took out the logging industry that would have been prominent there, like much of the UP. Instead, all of that, you know, those fires left acidic soil that really nurtured crops for blueberries. And so they have a huge wild blueberry festival in August. So that's gotten on my calendar for sure, because I am lucky enough to head over to South Haven's Blueberry Festival, but I would love to see one on Lake Superior. I think that's a totally different viewpoint. And also goes to show you, just like we've talked before about Michigan's ag history and its, you know, presence there. And I think that's so cool to think all the way up to Lake Superior, we have something like that. And then people will probably know Paradise more so for Tequamina Falls and for the National Forest there. And so it's just an outdoorsman's paradise. So, you know, you have hiking, you have kayaking, you have snowmobiling. And so it's just one thing after another if you're looking to get outside of Michigan.
Well, and for me, I mean, I'm a boater. I love the Great Lakes. For me, the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum is there, right? And that's another thing that you can enjoy and get to experience while you're there. I have been to Paradise. How about that? I've been to Paradise.
That
sounds like the name of a good song.
Yeah.
I've been to Paradise. Yeah. But it's a great place to visit, more to the point. I remember going up there, and I remember staying in a bed and breakfast there. It was in the winter. And I saw Lake Superior in the winter with big ice chunks that were broken, but on the lake. And the waves, I remember one day, were, must have been 10 feet rolling. And it was so powerful, so magnificent, so kind of otherworldly. You just don't see something like that. People who've not been to the Upper Peninsula or seen or experienced Lake Superior have no idea how incredibly powerful and really, the word gets overused, but in this case, it's probably just kind of awesome, Lake Superior is. So to get to experience all of that up there, it's a beautiful part of the world.
Well, I think powerful is a great word for it too, because the stat that I was most surprised from the Shipwreck Museum is to learn that there's 200 shipwrecks just surrounding that area.
Of course.
And just really like taking in the force of Mother Nature on that.
Absolutely. Well, very cool. Great list. Lindsay Moore, as always, great job. We so appreciate you being on. Big shout out to Dave Lorenz. Thank you for all you've done for us here in the state of Michigan to make people aware and to bring commerce to the state, and to be able to enjoy all the great places in the state of Michigan, some off the beaten path, which you, thankfully, Lindsay, have highlighted for us. And anybody wanting to check that out can go to mlive.com. 3 Michigan cities to visit. Thanks for being on with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Kristen, so if you've got to pick from one of the three, where are you headed to first?
Paradise.
Of course. Right.
who doesn't want to go to Paradise?
Kristen, just to remind you, you're in paradise right now.
Oh, but yes, that's right. Every day at this office is Paradise.
Yes. You better believe it. How about you, Lindsay? Where are you headed?
You know what? I think Claire is my first stop because I've seen the highway sign for it over and over, and now it's going to make me pull off on that exit.
So funny. I've seen the sign for Claire as well. I've been curious about it. I think there's a famous donut shop in Claire. There was.
Now I'm going to Claire.
Right. There you go.
Oh, you sold me. Now I'm going to Claire.
I remember there might be a donut shop in Claire owned by a couple of policemen. All right. Listen, I'm headed to Claire as well. I'll see you there at the donut shop. Have a great weekend. Good to do the show with you guys. As always, love being with you and bringing good content to our audience. And let's go out and make it a great weekend. Thanks for being here with us on Let's Go, Michigan.